It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
You know, a little while ago, I saw the injury to Blair Davenport, the former Bea Priestley. She was in a Japanese street fight against Mako Satomura on NXT UK this week. Nasty stuff. You know, she gave her a double foot stomp off the top rope on the apron and just slid right off Mako's back. She hit the floor and her ankle folded up underneath her. I always cringe when I see somebody doing that double foot stomp off the top when somebody's kind of laying or hanging in an awkward position. It just seems like a bad idea. And it proved to be a pretty bad idea in this case. They stopped the match. Now she's on crutches. She's got her foot in a boot. Here's to a speedy recovery. So not a good week for Blair Davenport, but what a week it was from Vince McMahon sending his own son home to Bill Goldberg showing up and cashing in his Goldberg in the Bank contract for yet another title match. Thank you, Groovy Goose, for that one. Ronda Rousey has made her choice for WrestleMania. Brian Kendrick pulled from Dynamite an hour before the show. CM Punk and MJF meet for the very first time. And Tony Khan is promising yet another big debut for Dynamite this Wednesday, saying that somebody is going to be walking through the forbidden door. But are they really? We have a lot to unpack. This is episode 742 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, February 6, 2022. I am the Solo Monster, bitch. Remember, just add the word bitch to the end of everything. It just makes it sound so much cooler, right? That's why that we have this in wrestling so often these days. If you want to get yourself a free trial of the Audible service, I haven't mentioned this in a while, but people have been asking me if they can still get a free book, and the answer is yes. Yes, you can. You can get one free audiobook of your choice with our offer through Audible, and there are a ton of books, not just wrestling books, but there are a ton of those too. The Death of WCW, you know, Daniel Bryan's book is up there. Everybody from the Young Bucks to Steve Austin to Chris Jericho, AJ Lee. Ton of wrestling books up there. And you can own one of them absolutely free when you sign up for a 30-day trial of the Audible service. Just use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. So yes, the link and the offer is still very much alive and well for listeners of the Sound Off. If you would like to make a PayPal donation and support the show, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. Boy, I better keep it on the right-hand side, because if I ever change it to the left-hand side, I'm going to be very confused. I've been saying right-hand for probably over a decade now. I am right-handed, but you'll find it on the right-hand side of the page. You know, the first kind of support that I ever got, any kind of like monetary support out of my work here on the show, was your PayPal donations. I came up with the nickname stuff as a way to at least have fun with it and give people an identity. And even after all these years, your PayPal support still means the world to me. So I thank all of our PayPal producers, including Killshot Keith Hart and his niece Lila, who is celebrating her first birthday this Wednesday. I shall dub the Lil Lady Lila. Lil Lady Lila Struble. Happy birthday to her. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Al-Safar, Big B, Bryant Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Fast Blast Tim Banks, Rolex Robin Party, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, John Raging Mad Riffle, the Pastor of Pain Damian Yule, and Handsome Harold White, who interviewed the Godfather, Charles Wright, for his podcast called I See Things a Little Differently. Just search for that title and find the episode. It drops tomorrow, February 7th, on all streaming platforms. Again, it's called I See Things a Little Differently, an interview with The Godfather. For those who are wondering when we're going to be doing our next call-in show, you won't have to wait too much longer because the plan is for the next episode of Better Call Saul Monster to go live on Thursday night. So if you are a channel member on YouTube at any level, you will be able to join live and call in, and I'm sure there will be no shortage of things to discuss. So the plan right now is Thursday night, probably around 9 Eastern, but I will let you guys know. And also, I am working to get out the next bit of retro audio, one of the lost episodes of The Sound Off, episode 13, which is, I know, one that some of you are looking forward to listening to. That is my Royal Rumble 2008 review. I was at Madison Square Garden for that show, so there's a lot of good stuff in that episode that'll be going up for Legends members in the days ahead. This Saturday night, House of Glory is live at 7 Eastern on Fight TV. At least that is the plan as of right now. If that changes, I'll let you guys know. But we are live nonetheless here at the NYC Arena for Repentance, with Alex Shelley making his Hog debut to challenge Low Key for the Crown Jewel Championship. Private Party returns to House of Glory against Willie Mack and Rich Swann. And appearing live in House of Glory for the first time in 5 years. And he is a very different wrestler now than he was back then. Switchblade Jay White returns to take on the man that he actually wrestled the last time he came to the NYC Arena, Cashflow Ken Broadway. So I will be on the call with JD, the birthday boy. Happy birthday to him. I will be on the call with him. First four rows are sold out, but general admission tickets are available at hogwrestling.net. I hope to see some of you at the venue next Saturday night. There was a lot of fallout coming out of last weekend's Royal Rumble. Mike Johnson of PWInsider.com first reported that Matt Riddle was originally penciled in to be the winner of the men's Rumble match, claiming that plans changed multiple times over the course of the week before settling on the Brock Lesnar surprise. Fightful later countered that report, saying that Riddle was never going to win the Royal Rumble match. And that I believe. I don't believe for a second that Matt Riddle was ever going to win the Royal Rumble. And I know, you know, PW Insider has a very good track record on these things generally, but it made no sense when I read it then, and as I say it out loud now, it still makes no sense. I mean, when does WWE ever really come out of left field with a surprise fresh face like that as the winner? Not very often. As soon as Brock Lesnar won the WWE title at Day One, it was a done deal. Even if they didn't finalize things until later on, Brock Lesnar was winning the Royal Rumble. It was plain as day. It's why I said it for weeks. When it came right down to it, it was always going to be Brock Lesnar, because Brock Lesnar was going to WrestleMania to challenge Roman Reigns. And if Roman Reigns was not going to lose the championship to Seth Rollins, then Brock Lesnar had to win the Royal Rumble. But the big story coming out of the Rumble involved Shane McMahon, who was brought in not only as a Royal Rumble surprise, but as a producer for the match, as he has been the past few years. He was one of many names chipping in to help lay out the match. And if you have read all of the stories of this week, it seems like every day there's a new story or a new bit of information that comes out about this whole Shane McMahon Royal Rumble thing and things he wanted to do, or, you know, the way he was acting behind the scenes. It's been this developing story throughout the week. You would read all of this and you would think this guy was the devil reincarnated and everything bad about that Royal Rumble match was his fault. Even though all of his ideas were supposedly rejected by Vince McMahon. A lot, if not all of his ideas, were shot down. Which makes it very strange that Shane would be the reason the men's Rumble sucked so bad. It's almost like they're trying to deflect blame or something. Because it could never be Vince McMahon's fault. Oh, no, 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 no. Absolutely not. It's always those darn people beneath him. He's just powerless to do anything about it. But Shane was said to have taken on more interest this year in his role in the match, as bad as that Rumble match was. And it was very bad. One of the worst Royal Rumble matches that they have ever done. That is not what led to what happened the day after. It was his behavior backstage that is said to have led to WWE scrapping all plans for him for the Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania and sending him home. There goes the money. Vince McMahon fired his own son. Now, I think it was more a case of them just dropping whatever program they had in mind for him and sending him home on a temporary vacation. I doubt he answered his phone and got a call from Johnny Ace like everybody else does, although that would be fucking hilarious if he did. He effectively fired his own son a week after Vince's mother died, Shane's grandmother. That's cold. That is cold. But Shane is said to not be working, and this has been the case for a while, really ever since he came back to the company. He has not been working in any kind of executive role. The last executive role that he had in this company, I think, was probably in 2009 when he up and quit. You know, he was brought back strictly or primarily as talent, but he has been helping to lay out the men's rumble the past few years. But this time, for whatever reason, even though we've never really heard stories like this about Shane before, he was said to be a nightmare to work with this time. He got into it with Jamie Noble at one point, who was a very well-liked, very well-respected producer behind the scenes. He got into it with him over, you know, they clashed over ideas. Per PW Insider, in following up on a Ringside News report, who was first to report on a lot of the Shane stuff, there were creative plans for Shane to be a regular on Monday Night Raw going forward, leading into WrestleMania. He had been pushing hard to work with Austin Theory at Mania with the idea of playing into his involvement with Vince, with Shane's father. Others were pushing for a match with Shane and Seth Rollins. There was another report suggesting the idea of Shane maybe against Bobby Lashley, that was broached at one point, although that may have been before Lashley won the WWE title back. The Austin Theory idea is the only one that even remotely makes any sense, but there was a planned sequence in the Royal Rumble match involving Shane and Seth Rollins that was scrapped when Rollins was pulled from the Rumble. He was going to not just wrestle Roman at the beginning of the show. At one point, the plan was for Rollins, kind of like Brock ended up doing, to also pull double duty and appear in the Rumble match. And, you know, we can talk about Shane McMahon, as we are doing right now. We can talk about Shane McMahon, but Vince McMahon is said to have taken a far more hands-on approach himself to both the men's and the women's Rumble, way more than usual. He was changing things literally 20 times before everything was finally settled for these matches. He was driving everybody fucking nuts with all of the changes, to the point that people didn't even know what their number was in some cases until they were literally about to go through the curtain. They didn't know what order the eliminations were supposed to be in. So it's easy to make Shane McMahon a scapegoat for everything that you've heard this week, but his father is not exactly blameless in this. It's too bad he won't send himself home, or to the home, where he belongs. But on Monday afternoon, Shane was pulled internally from the Raw roster. He was not backstage at the show. It was said that he was very frustrated the day of the Rumble by a lot of his ideas being shot down by his father. He was said to be very upset that he wasn't allowed to do what he wanted and that he was greatly preoccupied by his own role in the match. Andrew Zarian of the Mat Men podcast said that there were also a lot of changes for what number Bad Bunny would enter the Rumble, which upset people because they came off completely disorganized. Here you bring in this major celebrity back, and it doesn't seem like you know what the fuck you're doing. So they felt it reflected poorly on them. All the dysfunction is just, it's embarrassing. But the fact that Shane McMahon and Bad Bunny were in the final four of this year's Royal Rumble should be enough to put heat on every single person who was involved in the planning of that match. That is absurd. Those two names right there were part of your Final Four. Have them in the match. Don't have them in the Final Four and make the rest of your roster look less than. But the scariest part of all of this may be that Shane being frustrated that he wasn't able to do what he wanted when you consider what he did do. What the hell did he actually want that we didn't see? He came in, he was throwing those terrible punches. Kevin Owens had to sell for him. Matt Riddle had to sell for him. Owens hit him with two super kicks and went to throw him out of the ring. Shane no-sold him and reversed it and threw Owens out of the ring. You know, when news first broke that Shane was going to be back on the Raw brand and back for a WrestleMania match this year, I said on Twitter, why is Shane McMahon wrestling at WrestleMania still a thing? And I got a very mixed reaction. You know, Shane's first match back after a 7-year hiatus was at the last WrestleMania they did in Dallas. That was the Hell in a Cell match with The Undertaker where he jumped off the top of the cell. That's what he does. He jumps off very high things. One of the few times that he didn't was in the match that he had with AJ Styles at WrestleMania in Orlando. That was the best thing on an otherwise very dull WrestleMania. But he was also in the ring with AJ Styles, one of the best in the world. I would not expect AJ Styles to go out there and stink out the joint. It's kind of hard to go in there with AJ and have a bad match. There was a match with The Miz at WrestleMania 35 that was one of the best built matches coming into the show. It ended up being mostly a bore. I know some people are going to disagree. Oh, he jumped off the platform. It was a fucking bore. Everyone talks about that spot where Miz suplexed him off the platform onto the cardboard boxes down below. That does not make it a great match. Most of the stuff that he has done since then has not been good. The guy gets blown up just doing a promo. He's out there sweating bullets. He does not look healthy when he's out there. His offense looks like shit. You know, he was a novelty act. And that novelty has long since worn off with me. He was the one McMahon that at least was tolerable on television until he wasn't. Until they overexposed even him. And now it just feels like, well, it's WrestleMania time, so let's have the obligatory Shane McMahon match. That's how it ended up being with Triple H. Triple H has had some great WrestleMania matches. But it got to a point with him in recent years where it's like, well, it's time for the obligatory Triple H match. We just have to have, it's like a prerequisite of the show. We have to have Triple H in a match on the show. No, you don't. No, you don't. And that's kind of where I was with Shane and am with Shane McMahon when it comes to WrestleMania. The only Shane McMahon match worth having was against Triple H. I laid it all out after Shane came back to the company. You talk about a great story. There was a story there for the taking with those two. And they didn't do it. And now they'll never do it because Triple H is done. You want to get a sense of how serious his heart issues must be? Look at how they have hidden him away. Ever since. That was a lot more serious than anybody let on. But we did not need to see another Shane McMahon match at WrestleMania this year. Or someone like Seth Rollins, who's been doing great work recently, being wasted away in one. And thankfully now, we don't have to worry about that. But he will be back. Probably before the year is out, Shane McMahon will eventually be back. He can enjoy his vacation, and he can come back when they're desperate for another attraction for one of their Saudi Arabia shows. Speaking of that sweet Saudi money, we've got one coming up in less than 2 weeks, the Elimination Chamber. And Raw on Monday was all about setting up the Chamber match, which will be contested for the WWE Championship. I am aware that they have done this before, where the title itself is defended inside the Chamber. I know Daniel Bryan, I think, did it a couple of times. But I think it would have been better to use this match as a way to determine who would be challenging for the WWE title at WrestleMania. As the Royal Rumble is to WrestleMania, so too could be the Elimination Chamber for whichever brand's title is not being defended in the main event. Brock Lesnar is headlining WrestleMania. But Brock Lesnar will also be inside the Elimination Chamber challenging for the WWE Championship. Because, as he said on Monday night, he still wants to challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, title for title. Brock has already made his choice. He will challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal title. But they continue to tease the idea of champion against champion at WrestleMania, which explains why the Chamber is for the title this year. Them doing champion against champion only makes sense to me if they're unifying the titles, and it doesn't sound like they're going to do that. Based on what Paul Heyman was saying and the language he was using on SmackDown on Friday night, he used the words winner take all. Not one time in all the times they've teased this on TV has the word unify or unification been mentioned. Friday night, he specifically, two different times, used the words winner take all for what Brock Lesnar is asking for. Which means that we would end up with one man walking around with two belts like Becky Lynch did. Brocky two belts. I would be good with a unification. It should have happened a long time ago. Either end the brand split or have one champion that floats between shows. Brock is already going back and forth anyway between both shows. Brock Lesnar is not being pinned twice in a row on back-to-back pay-per-view. So Brock Lesnar is winning the Elimination Chamber. Someone emailed me yesterday with a stat that they saw, probably on Reddit or something, but I thought this was too good not to mention. When Brock Lesnar wins the WWE title back, he will have taken it off of every black champion to have ever held specifically the WWE title. We're not talking World Heavyweight Big Gold, specifically the WWE Championship. He took it from The Rock. He took it from Kofi Kingston. He took it from Big E. And now he's probably going to take it from Bobby Lashley. I guess this is his way of celebrating Black History Month. He'll be making history of his own if he wins that title back in Saudi Arabia, which, again, I think is pretty much a foregone conclusion. Now, on Monday, Lashley and MVP, they were out to open the show. Lesnar came out in his gear. He was dressed for a fight. He was all smiles. He should have been out there like he was the night after WrestleMania 31, when Rollins cashed in his money in the bank, ready to murder someone. But we got jovial Brock, who said, look, I'm not mad at Lashley and MVP. I'm mad at Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. And he wanted a rematch with Lashley. Lashley had no interest in such a thing. Instead, Adam Pearce put Lesnar in the chamber. So he didn't have to qualify because the man was screwed out of the championship. Seth Rollins was also automatically inserted into the chamber, which doesn't quite make as much sense. AJ Styles, Matt Riddle, and Austin Theory all had to qualify in separate matches, with Theory taking the spot originally earmarked for Shane McMahon. Shane never even should have been considered for the match in the first place. You know, Austin Theory is the star on the rise who benefits by being in there with all these other big names. It kind of makes it look like he deserves to be in there. He can hang with those guys. And I have no doubt that he could hang with those guys because he's had some pretty damn good matches on TV in the last few months. I think he'll do just fine inside there. He's not going to win, but I think he'll do just fine in the chamber. But that's the kind of person, whether it's Theory or somebody else, somebody new that they're pushing, that you should, you know, kind of reserve at least one spot for in a match like that. They basically fell ass backwards into doing the right thing by putting Austin Theory in there. But then on SmackDown Friday night, it gets even better. Because on SmackDown Friday night came the return of Bill Goldberg with one match left on his current contract, who will be heading to Saudi Arabia to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. Yet another title match for Goldberg. Why bother entering the Royal Rumble when you can just cash in your Goldberg in the Bank contract for a shot anytime you want? Vince McMahon is finally getting the match he wanted to do 2 years ago. At least it's happening in 2 weeks and not at WrestleMania. Now Goldberg gets to play, you know, potentially spoiler to Brock Lesnar's hopes of another match with Roman Reigns. Now maybe Brock intentionally cost Goldberg the match to preserve his own match with Roman Reigns. You know, I seem to recall a February pay-per-view many years ago where Goldberg cost Lesnar a championship. Maybe Brock will return the favor. That was almost 20 years ago. And here we are still with Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg. Amazing. Goldberg has had success twice before in the month. And I want to point this out too, because do I believe that Bill Goldberg is going to go to Elimination Chamber and be the one to beat Roman Reigns 500 and something days as champion, this close to WrestleMania, this close to what looks to be a winner-take-all match against Lesnar? No. I'm pretty confident sitting here saying that Roman Reigns is not going to lose the title to Bill Goldberg. But I can't sit here with 100% certainty and tell you that. And the reason why I can't do that is because I said the same thing a few years ago when Goldberg went to Saudi Arabia to wrestle The Fiend for the Universal Championship. And remember how that turned out. But it's not just The Fiend. Bill Goldberg has had quite a level of success in the month of February winning the Universal title. He won it from Kevin Owens in 2017. And he won it from The Fiend in 2020. I'm sure we all remember that. That Super Showdown. So I put nothing past these people because these people are idiots. But it could be Big Bill's final match ever. Can't really think of a bigger opponent for him to get in the ring with at this point than Roman Reigns. Roman is one of the biggest stars in the entire industry. So if he's going to go out, Roman Reigns is not a bad name for Bill Goldberg to go out with. This could be his final match. They should make it title versus career and have Reigns smash him in 5 minutes. I think it took about 9 minutes for Drew McIntyre when he wrestled Goldberg at the Royal Rumble last year. It shouldn't even take that long for Roman Reigns. I've never been completely negative on the idea of Goldberg doing a special match here and there. My issue has always been, and you can go back and listen to what I said the last time about this, my issue has always been why, after having already won the championship twice, any of these matches need to be contested for a title. They don't. It is beyond embarrassing. And yet, despite the negative feedback to the Rumble and the boss sending his son home, oh my God, backstage turmoil. There's a report from Fightful this week about morale in the locker room being as low as it has ever been. Despite all of it, WWE announced on Thursday that revenue for last year increased to a record $1 billion for the first time in the history of the company. You save a lot of money when you fire 80 wrestlers and however many other office people they got rid of last year. All those budget cuts. Truth be told, more than 85% of that comes from television and streaming deals. It's not even really about the cuts. It's television and streaming deals. Which just goes to show you how important those deals are with Fox and NBC Universal. I have to give them credit. I really do. I have to give them credit. They continue to make money in spite of themselves. WWE wasn't the only company making news this week. Brian Kendrick was scheduled to wrestle Jon Moxley in his AEW debut on Wednesday night until past comments that he made about things like the Sandy Hook School Massacre and the Holocaust came back to haunt him. And after somebody posted on Twitter clips of things that he had said that I had never even heard before, really whacked out stuff, the timing of which seemed designed to make AEW look bad for bringing him in because he spent years working for WWE and nobody ever made an issue out of it. But it worked. It worked. And Tony Khan pulled him from the show about an hour before they were scheduled to go live on the air. Kendrick asked for his WWE release a few months ago, and it was granted, as Mustafa Ali weeps off in the distance. The last we saw Kendrick on television, Harlan was throwing him down a flight of stairs on NXT. I don't think he threw him hard enough. Kendrick was in a neck brace the next week, challenging Harlan to a fight, which ended up not happening. But he came back to WWE about 7 or 8 years ago, when they brought him in as a trainer, and then he ended up working the Cruiserweight Classic, and he was wrestling on 205 Live. That was his third stint with the company. Evidently, WWE was aware of his conspiracy comments. He said as much in an interview that he did with Lillian Garcia back in 2017, where he said that he was yellow carded when they did a background check on him. They flagged him, which he said meant that they had to take caution before bringing him back. due to past comments that he had made about the company, because I'm sure he was very upset the last time he got released, but also some of the conspiracy stuff that was out there. They were aware of it, and they told him, look, you can't be doing that anymore. And he said he understood, and that was the end of it. Until this week. Tony Khan tweeted before the show, "We have been made aware of abhorrent and offensive comments made in the past by Brian Kendrick. There is no room in AEW for the views expressed by Brian. We think it is best for all that Brian be pulled from tonight's card as we gather more information. We will announce a replacement bout ASAP." Which ended up being Jon Moxley against Wheeler Yuta, by the way. Kendrick is big into conspiracy theories. I think some people already knew this. Not everybody was aware of it. I was aware that he had some kooky views in the past on conspiracy stuff, but nothing like what came out this week. But he is big into conspiracy theories. And I'm not just talking about alien probes and who really killed JFK and stuff like that. We're talking false flag type stuff about Sandy Hook denial, Holocaust denial, Jewish first responders arriving in Haiti after the earthquake who were reptilian and who were there to scoop up eyeballs. Really disturbing stuff that no reasonably intelligent person would ever be spouting off about. There are certain lines you do not cross. Holocaust and Sandy Hook denial are two of those lines. You have to be a real sick puppy to believe in that shit. That or very gullible. Probably a little bit of both. Someone online responded to the Holocaust stuff, which I'm not going to repeat. You can look it up yourself if you want. But somebody replied on Twitter asking if this is why he and Paul London don't seem to be very close anymore. And it's very interesting that the first person to like that post was Paul London. So that might give us our answer right there. It is interesting how he spent the last 8 years with WWE and none of this was ever raised on social media. And only on the day that he is set to debut with AEW does it become a lead story. These comments were about a decade old. I myself were unaware of how far down the rabbit hole this guy went with the conspiracy stuff. It's really pathetic. Which is not to say that some things in life don't deserve to be questioned. But when you literally question everything, including some things for which there is no room for questioning, you lose all credibility and nobody takes you seriously. You become the tinfoil hat guy. And that's what Brian Kendrick became, the tinfoil hat guy. Yes, it is very convenient that all of this happened to come up on Wednesday. But the fact is, it did come up. I go back to the Hogan stuff. When Hogan was exposed on tape and using the N-word and throwing it around, yes, he had his privacy violated. That's why he sued. Absolutely, he had his privacy violated. But the genie was out of the bottle. You can't pretend that you didn't hear what he said. A lot of people will never look at Hulk Hogan in the same light again. And you can understand why. It doesn't matter if his privacy was violated. They still heard it, and it painted him in a horrible, horrible light. So yes, it is convenient that all of this came up on Wednesday, but it did come up. And there is no excuse for it, and even Kendrick seems to feel the same way, or at least that's what he now claims. He did damage control later on that night on Twitter. He said, "I apologize for all the hurt and embarrassment I have caused with my words. These are not my beliefs and never were beliefs of mine, and I crossed the line. I spread the most vile comments without thinking of the damage it would cause. I will live with this regret for the rest of my life. I am truly sorry for the pain I have caused." I look at this. It didn't cause me any pain. I just look at him in a different way now. I look at him, you know, it's sad. It's embarrassing. More than anything. I hope he's sincere, because I would be ashamed beyond belief to be associated with views like that. Tony Khan made the right move by pulling him. He didn't fire him. If you read the tweet, people going off on Tony Khan, "Oh, how could you fire this guy?" And, you know, going after him for firing him. Where in that tweet did Tony Khan say he fired Brian Kendrick? We don't even know if Kendrick had a contract signed. We never did get that All Elite graphic, right? Brian Kendrick is All Elite. I don't even think the guy was working with a contract. You can't fire somebody if they're not under contract. He merely pulled him from the show to give themselves more time to look into things, and because it would have, I think, turned very ugly for him in front of that crowd in Chicago. That was not the night for this man to be debuting on live television. And as I said in my Dynamite review, Brian Kendrick is free to believe whatever the hell he wishes, just as Tony Khan is free to employ who he wants. And I would not want to be associated with someone with those views either. I hope he's sincere, but I am sure that he also realizes that if he ever wants work in a major promotion ever again, those tweets were necessary, or that tweet was necessary to try to show people that he is not completely batshit insane. Now, Dynamite this week pulled 954,000 overnight viewers. That is the lowest number since moving to TBS for a show headlined by the first ever meeting between CM Punk and MJF, which I thought was an excellent match. I thought it was a pay-per-view caliber main event. It ended with MJF handing Punk his first loss in AEW, exactly the way it should have been. But that number was not great, given that they were promoting the match and building up to it for weeks and weeks on television. They should have done a better number, more in line with what they did the week before. They did 1.1 million viewers the week before for that Beach Break show and that ladder match with Cody Rhodes and Sammy Guevara. Now, they're up from where they were a year ago the same week, which was 844,000. So I don't agree with people saying that there's been no growth for the company, because year over year, that is just demonstrably false. But I'm also not going to sit here and pretend that that's not a disappointing number, because it is. Yes, they were still third on cable for the night, but it was still a disappointing number. They went down. They didn't go up. Both of those things can be true. They can be third on cable, which is good, but still have a disappointing number. All of the people making excuses for this, it was disturbing, because if this was a really bad Monday Night Raw rating, they would be the first to jump all over WWE and shit on them for it. I mean, you got to be fair about these things. I'm not surprised they lost over 100,000 viewers for that Brandi Rhodes segment. I'll get to that in a second. But with Punk and MJF, some people thought the match was too long. I didn't have an issue with the length. You know, the ad breaks are a necessary evil. They're a killer, but they're a necessary evil when you give away a big match like that on TV. We just dealt with this with the two matches between Hangman Page and Bryan Danielson. I mean, the two of them went out there at Winter is Coming and had a 60-minute Iron Man match. There were at least four different breaks throughout the entire match. It's like Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar on UPN all those years ago on SmackDown. When you do an Iron Man match or any kind of long match on TV, a pay-per-view level match, that's what you're going to deal with. So I think a lot of people just didn't like that. They felt it kind of maybe killed the flow of the match or felt like it dragged longer than it should have been to them. But you know what to expect going into a long match like that. MJF winning was the right choice. You know, first they did a false finish midway through with a ref stoppage until the referee spotted the wrist tape that MJF was concealing while he choked out Punk, so Bryce Remsburg restarted the match. A lot of times when they do a false finish like that, the babyface comes back and wins, and that didn't happen here. MJF cheated and he beat him again, only this time the referee was none the wiser. Wardlow came down to the ring, he slipped the Dynamite Diamond ring to MJF, who used it to knock out Punk. I loved how Wardlow slipped him the ring very covertly behind his back without us knowing, because the camera didn't show it. It just showed Wardlow stepping over MJF's body on the floor to go nose to nose with Punk. Meanwhile, he was handing the ring off to MJF. You know, then he backed away. It kind of made you think that he was going to let Punk finish him off. Meanwhile, Wardlow had already done the deed. So I like that. And now things are set up for a rematch at Revolution next month, very likely, and probably with some sort of stipulation. It could be a cage match. You know, it could be no disqualification. I think Wardlow gets it. I wouldn't have Wardlow barred from ringside just because I feel like part of the drama, you're still building to a split with MJF and Wardlow, and I think something has to happen in that match to, you know, exacerbate that or lead directly to it. I think Wardlow gets involved again, but it backfires this time and it gives Punk the win. You know, this, after Wardlow, very likely he may win that Face of the Revolution ladder match earlier that night at Revolution to earn the right to challenge for the TNT title. I mean, we already know things are headed south between him and MJF. It's just a matter of Well, which show does it happen? Where do they pull the trigger? Is it at the pay-per-view? Do they do it on TV? Do they drag this out until Double or Nothing? I mean, there's a bunch of different options that they have. People are ready for it, though. You hear these reactions when something happens on TV, or if MJF slights Wardlow and Wardlow makes a funny face at him. These people are ready to go off. They're ready to pop off and see Wardlow destroy this man. The punk stuff is almost secondary at this point to the Wardlow stuff. I think that's great. Wardlow is the younger, newer star that you're building. Punk doesn't need to be built. They're not trying to build CM Punk. You're trying to build someone like Wardlow. So when people say, oh, this whole thing is a failure, it's more about Wardlow and MJF than it is about Punk. Punk almost feels like, you know, it's almost like he's in the background or something. I don't necessarily feel that way. I think, you know, the Punk stuff is fine. The Wardlow stuff is fine. But what's the issue with that? Let's say that's true. Isn't that a good thing? I mean, Wardlow is the one that you're building. You're trying to create new stars, right? So I don't see a problem with it. Bryan Danielson came out after Jon Moxley's win over Wheeler Yuta to pitch a potential alliance with Danielson and Moxley, maybe taking some young talent under their wing like Yuta or like Daniel Garcia or Lee Moriarty. This is an idea that Bryan had already pitched in media interviews that he did a couple of months ago. He has talked about wanting to, at some point, form a small faction. I mean, God knows there's plenty of them, so why not have one more? A small faction where he could bring in at least one or one or two younger names that he could sort of mentor and take under his wing. And now he's talking about doing this on television. I still think we end up one-on-one Moxley against Danielson at Revolution, but I am thinking that maybe coming out of that match, maybe we do get some sort of group or alliance, and maybe Moxley and he can coexist, you know, depending on who wins the match at the pay-per-view and how things shape up coming out of that. I think you got to do the match, but maybe you do the match first, and then coming out of it, you can get a few months out of an unholy alliance of sorts between the two, and maybe they do bring in a couple of young guys under their wing. I don't think that would be a terrible idea. Now, I mentioned the Brandi Rhodes segment. There was a segment on TV on Wednesday with Brandi Rhodes coming out in front of the Chicago crowd. She did not get a very warm welcome in the Windy City. And Dan Lambert came out with the Men of the Year. This is the segment, the first segment of the night. Not the only segment, but the first segment that lost viewers. Quite a few viewers, in fact. Six figures worth of viewers on this show tuned out when this segment began. Brandi confronted Lambert in the ring. They were trading insults back and forth. Of course, they had a segment a few months ago on TV. I think it was back in December. That never really went anywhere. It was teasing a fight or a match between Brandi and Lambert, which sounds awful. And I was kind of hoping that it was just one of those forgotten things. But then they brought it back. They came back around to it on Wednesday. And Lambert brought out Paige VanZant, who I think could have a real aptitude for this. I would like to see more of her on TV and what she can do in the ring in an actual match. And it looks like they might be building to a match between Brandi Rhodes and Paige VanZant. But all of this just feels like a vanity project when it comes to Brandi Rhodes. Or they could just be filming content for her reality show. Maybe they need content for the next season of Rhodes to the Top. And here it is. We need Brandi on TV doing stuff, so we have to film stuff that we can use on the show. Could very well be what this is all about. But the point that I made on Wednesday still stands. For all of the talent that Tony Khan has signed, for all of the talent that Tony Khan continues to tease signing, who are not getting much FaceTime right now on TV, all the names they have brought in, a lot of them are not getting a lot of FaceTime on Dynamite. They're not getting a lot of FaceTime on Rampage. Maybe on Dark, if they're lucky. Would it not be a better use of television time to feature them and not Brandi Rhodes in these types of segments? I am not sure who it is supposed to be appealing to. When I watch a segment like that, who is that supposed to be appealing to? The crowd shit on her again. They chanted, "Shut the fuck up" at her. while she shared the ring with Dan Lambert, one of the most hated characters on the show. I don't know what they're going for here, but it ain't working. Now, this Wednesday, there's a Texas death match. It's going to be Hangman Page defending the AEW World title against Lance Archer. Chris Jericho has called a mandatory meeting of the Inner Circle, excuse me. They're also going to have the first qualifying match for the Face of the Revolution ladder match with Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party wrestling a mystery opponent who will be showing up for the first time in AEW and signing a contract. And on that note, Tony Khan had promised some scoops on Rampage Friday night, some sort of special announcement. This after he appeared on Busted Open Radio Friday morning, and he said the following. Just in the last several weeks, we have made some big signings, and I plan to make some more big signings. Not in the long-term future, I'm talking short-term future. I will still be active in the free agent market, and the Forbidden Door shall be opening again very soon. I guarantee you we will be making news out of tonight's show, and then we will have some big news next week, too. There was no announcement on the show. That came after the show, when they went off the air, on Twitter. Tony Khan elaborated on what he was talking about by announcing the following. As referenced on Rampage, I have a surprise on Dynamite. A top wrestler will walk through the Forbidden Door this Wednesday and debut in AEW. The Forbidden Door can be open for anyone from any wrestling promotion in the world, whether or not it is a company that AEW is on good terms with, even if it is someone from a company that is open for business. They're also welcome to slam the door in the face of their prior company. The big announcement for Wednesday's Dynamite that we referenced on Rampage, that being a free agent debut, and the person walking through the Forbidden Door are one and the same. They're walking in the door, signing a contract, and then slamming the door shut Wednesday on Dynamite. So the person wrestling Isaiah Cassidy is the same person that Tony Khan is referring to in his tweets. They're not debuting two different people on Dynamite this week. Keith Lee, who is now free from his WWE non-compete, is said to be on Tony Khan's radar even before he made this announcement this week. He was said to be on Tony Khan's radar if he wasn't already signed to a deal to come into the company. So Keith Lee is the one who I've been saying when people ask me, who do you think is really going to be showing up soon in AEW? The first two names I usually throw out there these last few weeks are Keith Lee and Ember Moon. I think Keith Lee and Ember Moon are going to end up for sure in AEW. I was a little less sure about the other names, but we clearly are going to see more free agent signings in this company. But the first name I thought of here, or actually I shouldn't say the first, one of the first names that I thought of here was Keith Lee. And my money was going to be on him as the person showing up on Wednesday, but I saw that he and Mia Yim got hitched the other night. I think it was last night. They got married. I would be more focused on my honeymoon than trying to qualify for a ladder match. That's me. But now I'm not so sure. I don't know what their plans are. You know, some people put their honeymoon off. But now I'm not so sure. But when Tony Khan talks about this forbidden door, it is usually in reference to someone who already works for another company. That's why my mind first went to New Japan. And the first name I thought of was Jay White, who is still based here in the States. But if you read those tweets, clearly he is referencing a former WWE guy. This is not an announcement about Jay White or Will Ospreay or Kota Ibushi or anyone like that coming in. This is about a former WWE talent. I don't think it's Karrion Kross. I don't think it's Bray Wyatt. I don't think it's Samoa Joe. I don't think that it's Johnny Gargano, because I don't think Gargano has any reason to show up on AEW and shoot on WWE or vent about his time in WWE. I mean, he was treated very well in NXT. I don't think he would have been treated nearly as well on the main roster, but he was always booked at a high level in NXT by Triple H. I mean, why would he vent about his former employer? What would he have to vent about? I think he and his wife were both treated very well in NXT. So I don't see Gargano doing something like that. I don't think it's him. Which leads me to the people who are either not yet free of their non-competes, as far as we know, or have not yet been granted their release by WWE. And any of these three names that I'm about to mention would fit in well in a ladder match if they qualify, which I'm sure whoever's wrestling Isaiah Cassidy is going to win. They would fit in very well in a ladder match at Revolution. John Morrison. John Morrison was released, I think, back on the 18th. It was around mid-November. So he won't be free for another couple of weeks. Technically, I think he would still be bound by his non-compete. But John Morrison is one name. Jeff Hardy is another name. We know Jeff Hardy is coming into AEW. It's not a matter of if, it is a matter of when. Matt Hardy has been teasing it. It's not been a subtle thing. I mean, legally, technically, I don't know that an agreement could be signed at this point, but he's coming in. It's just a matter of when. But Jeff Hardy, as far as we know, he won't be free until March. There is a Hardy family office tie-in, though, against Isaiah Cassidy, you know, the match on Wednesday. So consider that as a possibility that, you know, yes, he may not be officially free of his non-compete, but can we say for sure that it won't be Jeff Hardy? No, I can't say for sure that it won't be Jeff Hardy. Just like I can't sit here and tell you for sure that 100% it won't be this next guy. And that is Mustafa Ali. If anybody has a right to vent against his former employer, and if anybody would kill it in a ladder match at Revolution and be a great challenger for the TNT Championship, it would be Ali. Now, does Ali qualify as a top wrestler? He's a top talent. Top wrestler is probably pushing it. And he is not a free agent. As far as anybody knows, unless they gave it to him and he's keeping it really quiet, and in that case, I think WWE, if they were trying to save it as a surprise, they'd probably fuck him over by announcing that they let him go. But as far as we know, Ali still has not been granted his release by WWE. He went on social media weeks ago and made it very public that he could not deliver the message that he wanted to deliver and do the things that he wants to do while working for WWE, and so therefore he has requested his release. And then news reports came out that WWE had told him, had communicated to him, we're not going to give you your release. And since then, the lines of communication between the two sides have gone cold. And supposedly he had quite a bit of time left. At least a year, if not longer, maybe years left on his contract. Now, I don't believe they're going to keep Ali under contract for a year or a year and a half or 2 years. I've said before, I think if anything, it'll end up like Luke Harper. They'll keep him under contract for a few more months or several more months, and then they'll let him go. When they have their next big wave of cuts, or one of many, I'm sure, that will continue this year, his name will be on the list. That's kind of how I see things playing out there. So he's very unhappy. He wants out, and they don't want to let him out. So if he were to show up on Dynamite, that would open up a whole can of worms, not only for him, but for Tony Khan. Maybe it's a battle that Tony Khan would welcome. Maybe it's time that somebody with money steps up and challenges WWE on these non-compete clauses. WWE is not the only company in the world that does non-competes. You've heard of non-competes with people who work at fast food establishments. I think, frankly, in whatever industry you're in, these types of non-competes are fucking ridiculous, and I wish somebody would step up and challenge them on it. Maybe that's a battle that Tony Khan and AEW are willing to take on. Of course, it begs the question, does AEW have non-competes built into their contracts? Because that would be awfully hypocritical of them. Does AEW have non-competes built into their own contracts when somebody is let go? That is something I would like to know. Maybe somebody has shed light on this before. I don't know. Maybe Tony Khan has talked about this. I'm not aware one way or the other. They rarely let anybody go, so it's kind of hard to find out. We don't know. Usually, if anything, they'll just let your contract run out. But, I mean, how often do we really hear about Tony Khan releasing somebody early from their contract? I mean, it's happened a few times. Now, Jimmy Havoc is the one I keep going back to. That was a disciplinary thing. But it doesn't happen very often. If Ali showed up, it would create a stir. There's no doubt about it. but it wouldn't be a debut on the level of a CM Punk or Bryan Danielson or anything like that. You know, one thing I do believe is that Tony Khan hyping it up this way is a reaction to Wednesday's ratings. I absolutely believe that. I believe this is a reaction to that rating being down on Wednesday and being, you know, perceived as disappointing. He wants to create a buzz. He wants to create a stir and give people a reason to tune in to find out who this person is going to be. Who's it going to be? Who's the mystery man? And they're also hyping up a world championship match. We'll see how effective a strategy it turns out to be when the numbers come out. And no, Shane McMahon is not all elite. There are people who are asking these questions, you know, tongue-in-cheek, and there are people who are asking that question very seriously. I know we've seen some crazy things in wrestling, never say never and all that. That's usually true. But no, Shane McMahon is not all elite. First of all, that would be awful. As much as I had no interest in seeing Shane McMahon in a WrestleMania match this year, I have no interest in seeing him sweating bullets on Wednesday nights. Shane McMahon is not wrestling Isaiah Cassidy and going to the Face of the Revolution ladder match. Yeah, because when I think of the Face of the Revolution, the first face I think of is 52-year-old Shane McMahon. All these Shane is all elite memes. This is the new Cody Rhodes is going to be in the Royal Rumble. How'd that work out? But on Rampage on Friday night, Adam Cole got a quick win over Evil Uno and cut a very serious promo demanding that people respect him and saying that, yeah, you know, the loss to Orange Cassidy didn't count. It was a non-sanctioned match. Otherwise, I am undefeated officially, undefeated in AEW. And if you look at the rankings on the AEW website, guess who's next in line after Lance Archer to be the number one contender for the AEW world title? Adam Cole. So when Hangman beats Archer on TV this week, and Archer fails to win the championship, things are perfectly set up for an AEW title match, a main event at Revolution between Hangman Page and Adam Cole. Adam Cole flat out said at the end of the promo, I want to be the AEW world champion. Just like I've been saying, he's the next in line. He's the one who is going to challenge Hangman at Revolution. I've been saying it, and now things are set in motion for it. So all the people who said coming out of the Orange Cassidy match, oh, he's buried. He lost to Orange Cassidy in this street fight. He's buried. And I said, people misuse this word. The most misused and abused word in the wrestling lexicon is buried. Adam Cole is not buried. Mercedes Martinez and Thunder Rosa, they locked horns for the first time, and Mercedes Martinez got herself disqualified when she whacked Thunder Rosa in the head with a pipe, and then later on backstage revealed that she was paid off by Britt Baker to take out Thunder Rosa, and Britt Baker told her, you need to finish the job. She was not happy that Mercedes lost by DQ. She wants her to finish the job. So there's going to be a rematch at some point soon between Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez. But they are building, finally building to the rematch from last year. First time these two will lock up since their lights out match a year ago. It's going to be Britt Baker defending the AEW world title against Thunder Rosa. The only question is, do they do it at Revolution? Because they still have 4 weeks. Or do they hold out until Las Vegas and do it at Double or Nothing in May? Do they save the rematch for Revolution between Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez? You know, could they build up a split and an issue in the meantime between Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter and kill some time before they get to the match with Thunder Rosa? Absolutely, they could do either of those things. But we now know clearly what the direction is, as it should be. It's Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa. And one last AEW item. Riho is out with a broken collarbone that she suffered during her match with Britt Baker at Battle of the Belts last month. She broke it very early in their match. It may have been on a spot on the floor with Jamie Hayter. She came up grimacing in pain. She was holding her arm. This woman wrestled another 10 minutes with a broken collarbone and never complained about the injury. She never even so much as hinted at there being an injury. And that's a painful injury. She is in a sling now. She has said that she is back in Japan recovering, and she is expected to miss around 3 months. Let me tell you something. She may be tiny, but she's tough. Some other news and notes. On the latest edition of his Kurt Angle Show podcast, Kurt Angle said that the idea for a 3-week program on WWE television for him was dropped by the company at the last second, and he has not signed any deal with WWE. Now, he didn't go into any kind of specifics about what the program was going to be or why it got dropped. You know, he was at the Royal Rumble in St. Louis with his family last weekend. He was doing some documentary interviews, and he did a meet and greet. And, you know, he said last week WWE contacted him to return for a month or so. That's what he said, for a month or so. He would be back on TV. He said he was very excited for what they had planned. Well, plans change, pal. And it looks like that's not happening anymore. I can't imagine what it would have been. I mean, if they were bringing him in for 3 or 4 weeks only, I don't know what that would have been for. I mean, I would say if Gable Steveson was ready to debut soon on Monday Night Raw, since they drafted him already, Angle could have played a mentor or a coach role for him on TV. I'm sure that's not what it was, but just thinking of a potential role for Kurt. I don't even think that Kurt needs to be on TV, but if he was going to be, I you know, that would be kind of an interesting idea. But a 3-week program on TV, I mean, is he going to come in and do comedy stuff with the Alpha Academy? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what their plans were for him, but apparently, just like the plans for Shane McMahon at WrestleMania this year, those plans have gone out the window. Jay and Mark Briscoe were announced as the first inductees into the inaugural class of the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame. I did not have them as one of the first four names that I suggested last week, although I had them on my long list of possible inductees. I mean, it's not as if they don't deserve a spot. Greatest tag team in Ring of Honor history. Most decorated team in Ring of Honor history. Jay Briscoe's been a Ring of Honor world champion twice. So they're going to announce the second inductee tomorrow. They're doing one inductee per week for the entire month. So they're going to announce one this week, next week, and the week after. I still say Samoa Joe needs to be part of that first class. Nia Jax wins the award for Sad Tweet of the Week. Less so for standing by her position not to get the COVID vaccine, and more for what she said in response to a tweet that she was tagged in. You know, not getting vaxxed is what got her fired from WWE. I'm more offended that she wasn't fired for being terrible at her job, and it took her not getting jabbed in the arm to get rid of her. But this is what she said that got people talking. Honey, if you really think that all of your favorites don't feel the same as I do, you're sadly mistaken. I know a lot of people in many professional sports that just paid and got a real card from a doctor. Not a very smart thing to admit publicly to, knowing people that have done this, but Nia never struck me as the sharpest tool in the shed. Look, I'm sure this stuff happens all the time, not just with wrestlers. As she said, lots of other professional athletes who have the money and the means to do so can pay to get almost anything they want. I believe that 100%. Not unlike wrestlers getting phony prescriptions from marked doctors. I'm sure that still happens too. Probably happened, I mean, not probably. It happened a lot more, you know, back in the day. But it still happens. I'm sure it still happens. The only difference is, if said wrestlers want to gas themselves to the gills, that doesn't affect me. Buying a fake vaccine card, or selling one to someone willing to buy it when you're not really vaxxed and pretending like you are, that does potentially affect me, and a lot of other people. So fuck you, and anybody who does that. And Ric Flair announced this week that he and his girlfriend Wendy Barlow, the former Fifi the Maid from WCW, they've been together now for several years, where they were, they have decided to part ways less than 4 years after the two of them held a wedding ceremony, even though they were never actually married. In his statement, Ric Flair, in all caps, that's his trademark, every word is capitalized, "After taking some time apart, Wendy and I have decided to go our separate ways. Please respect our privacy and our families during this time. I will love and cherish all of our memories together forever, and I will be forever thankful for all that she has done to make my life better." Flair told People Magazine it was just a ceremony that they had. They were never actually married. Barlow confirmed there was never any marriage certificate even filed for. She said she and Rick have been living apart for the last 6 months. You know, it wasn't long ago when Flair almost died and had all of his health issues that this woman was changing his colostomy bag. Evidently, he still can't hold a relationship. This man is 72 years old. He's never going to change. Relationships are clearly not for the nature boy. We know marriage isn't for him. We know that. It's good that he never married her, given all the alimony he already pays out to his four ex-wives. The amount of alimony that this man pays out every month would probably rival the GDP of a lot of countries. You know what Ric Flair would be better off spending his money on? A VPN. Although I doubt he uses a computer much, but if he did, he of all people would be wise to play it safe and make sure that he was using ExpressVPN. You know, you hear me talk a lot about all of the safety and the security reasons for using a VPN, but there's another reason why you should be using ExpressVPN. All you Netflix users out there, I know there's a lot of you. I saw Netflix just jacked up their rates too. I use Netflix. I just finished the first half of the final season of Ozark. But did you know that Netflix has different content available depending on where you live? They have tens of thousands of shows and movies, but you're only getting access to a small fraction of that. Watching Netflix without ExpressVPN is like paying for a gym membership and only being allowed to use the treadmill. It doesn't make much sense. But you're in luck, because there's an easy way for you to unlock all of that content. ExpressVPN lets you change your online location so that you can control where you want Netflix to think that you're located. They have almost 100 different server locations. And it's not just Netflix either. It works well with other streaming services like BBC iPlayer and YouTube. I've watched stuff on Netflix myself using ExpressVPN to spoof my location. Pulp Fiction, I was watching on Canadian Netflix. My favorite Tarantino film. They've also got Modern Family on UK Netflix. Just open the app, choose a location, tap one button, and then refresh the page and access the geo-restricted show or movie that you want to watch. It's that easy. I use ExpressVPN because it's fast and I can stream in HD with no buffering. It also works with all your devices, phones, laptops, smart TVs, and it encrypts your data so that you can browse the web with peace of mind. So be smart and stop paying full price for streaming services only to get a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. When you use my link, you're going to get an extra 3 months for free. Only when you visit expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. Shane McMahon wasn't the only name missing from Raw last Monday. There was no Edge, no Randy Orton, no Damian Priest. And Finn Balor is still overseas on vacation, or he was, which is also why he missed the Royal Rumble. Rhea Ripley pinned Nikki A.S.H., which was a nice surprise. I thought they would keep this going into WrestleMania. Maybe that won't be the case after all. If Bianca Belair is challenging Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, and Rhea finishes up with Nikki, then what do you do with Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania? I was asking myself this question the other day. I would throw out two names. Both have been out with injuries, but maybe back in time for Mania. One is Asuka, who is not even listed on the Raw roster anymore on WWE.com for some odd reason. But I assume she'll end up back on the Raw brand. Or Bayley. If either of them want to pick a fight with Rhea, that would give her something to do at Mania. Rhea and Asuka squared off at last year's WrestleMania. I thought they had a good match, but the crowd was just completely dead for it. I would love to see them get another shot at it this year. And that would make more sense to me because I think if Bayley does make it back, boy, you know, it sure seems like Sasha Banks is the odd woman out of the SmackDown Women's title picture, and they may just end up putting the two of them together to do something at WrestleMania this year. Yeah, well, Sasha and Bayley are kind of like Owens and Zayn. I feel like they're destined to do stuff, whether it's as partners or enemies. They're destined to be attached at the hip for the rest of their careers. As much as I was entertained by the Spelling Bee last week with RK-Bro and the Alpha Academy. The scooter race this week between Riddle and Gable was not nearly as fun. The rules were that the two of them would have to do 50 laps around the arena before crossing a finish line that they placed on the floor at ringside, right in front of the announcers. So they spread these segments out throughout the entire show, and when it looked like Riddle was finally about to win and finally about to cross the finish line, Otis came out of nowhere and stopped him, and Gable won. It did lead to a match between Riddle and Otis, which turned into an Elimination Chamber qualifier that Riddle won. So Matt Riddle will have yet another chance to share the ring with Brock Lesnar, the man who once supposedly told him to his face backstage, "You and I will never work together." And they probably won't one-on-one, but they will have to work together at the Elimination Chamber, as they did briefly at the Royal Rumble. I would love it if they opened the chamber together. But I would imagine they want the visual of Brock stewing in one of the pods. But this is as close as Riddle is going to get to that elusive match that he always wanted with Brock Lesnar. I did laugh at the way Miz beat Dominic Mysterio in their match. He came off the ropes. He pretended that Rey tripped him up on the outside, which got Rey ejected for something he did not do. That's something that Eddie Guerrero would have tried. And then off the distraction, he hit the skull-crushing finale and pinned Rey Jr. It buried Dominic, I mean, who looked like a geek. But I thought it was funny, and I assume now that we're going to get Miz against Rey Mysterio tomorrow night. Got to put some heat back on the Miz somehow, since he had none left coming off those two straight losses to Edge. No Maryse, which was disappointing. Doesn't look like she's going to be sticking around. Kevin Owens had Seth Rollins on the KO show, and he said that he would be in the chamber after he beats Austin Theory. Owens does not travel to Saudi Arabia for these shows, so that was kind of a giveaway about who was going over in that match. Rollins said that he didn't get the Universal title, but he did get a permanent space in the brain of Roman Reigns. Hey, Roman Reigns still can't beat Seth Rollins. Rollins won the match, technically, just not the title. But the same holds true. Reigns cannot beat Rollins. Rollins announced that he was in the chamber, and Owens acted surprised that he had to qualify for it, but Rollins did not. He suggested that Rollins go tell Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville that Kevin Owens deserved a spot in the chamber, and if they didn't give him one, then Rollins would threaten to pull out of the match, right? Because they're best friends. And Rollins didn't really like that idea. And at that point, Theory came out for his match with KO. I thought the two of them had a good outing, with Theory going over for a spot in the chamber. Since they're already teasing possible problems between Rollins and Owens, I mean, that could be the WrestleMania match, even though they already did it 2 years ago. I mean, it was in front of no fans at the PC. Riddle pinned Otis later on after the scooter stuff to earn a spot in the chamber, and the final spot went to the winner of the match between AJ Styles and Rey Mysterio. They also had a very good match. And when I see Rey out there having matches like this, I have to show some appreciation and love here for Rey Mysterio, especially after some of the hate that he got a few weeks ago when he was revealed as the cover boy for 2K22. I thought a lot of that hate was unwarranted. But I watch Rey out there in matches like this, and I sit here in awe. Just thinking about all those years ago when it felt like he was out with a knee injury every couple of months, and his career felt like it was winding down. You know, I know he went to Columbia for that stem cell therapy for his knees. A lot of wrestlers and athletes have flown down to Columbia for that bioaccelerator stem cell therapy. Kevin Nash, because every time somebody goes down, these videos occasionally will pop up on my YouTube recommendeds. The company, this bioaccelerator company, they film a video of the wrestler showing up and taking them around and showing them, you know, what they do there and everything. So, like, Nash has flown down there, DDP, Bobby Lashley, Kurt Angle, John Morrison. Whatever it is that they did for Rey, it's working. Because this guy flies around in there like he hasn't missed a beat. He's 47 years old. He's been wrestling since 1989. And not a very easy style. You know, it's you see him flying around that ring, especially when he was younger, and all the stuff that he was doing, and you think, holy shit, this guy debuted when he was, you know, 15 years old. I used to say this guy's knees are made of glass. He was getting hurt all the time. I remember talking on this podcast about a decade ago about, you know, Ray's got to wind things down here. You know, he keeps getting hurt. This has got to be it for him. And then you see him out there still working at a high level, and he's been able to stay healthy, and it's incredible. Not incredible enough to win. AJ won with the Styles Clash. That now sets up Lashley, Lesnar, Rollins, Styles, Riddle, and Theory for the Elimination Chamber. That's a hell of a field. When you really look at the names that are all laid out there, it's a hell of a field for the Chamber. And there are lots of different ways that you could go with this. The favorite is Brock Lesnar, because why would he be in there if he's not winning, right? He's already gotten screwed over once. He's already been pinned once. I cannot envision that happening again. Plus, you know, why keep teasing this idea of winner take all if they're not doing it? When it was mentioned the first time a month or a month and a half ago, I thought it was just a one-time mention, but they kept going back to it. So why continue to mention it and tease it if you're not going to do it? Let me just say, I hate the idea of Bobby Lashley only having the championship for 3 weeks. I like Bobby Lashley as the WWE champion. I know not everybody is a fan. Some people think he's boring or whatever. I love it. I love Lashley as the WWE champion. I love the fact that it took a while, but he got to this point. The whole almighty thing, and as strong as they kept him when he had the US title, the pairing with him and MVP and the Hurt Business and everything, it finally clicked for him in this company. And he had the kind of success that he hadn't really experienced since his days in Impact, when he was the champion there and he was with American Top Team and doing the stuff, ironically, with Dan Lambert. And he was doing some of his best work in Impact. And so I'm happy to see finally him being built up in this way and becoming the champion. And they just put the belt back on him. And I would rather they not just take it off him 3 weeks later. So I'm not really a fan of that idea. But if they really wanted to think outside the box, this isn't going to happen. But they wanted to think outside the box. RK-Bro has been a thing now since this summer. Matt Riddle has said it was only supposed to be a one-time thing. He said the same thing about the pairing with Pete Dunne when they were the Broserweights in NXT. It was supposed to be a one-time thing, but it got over. It took off, and they ran with it. Orton was supposed to give him an RKO after one time together. He was going to drop him with an RKO, and that would have been the end of it. They would have had a match, and that would have been it. But it clicked. The people liked it. There was a certain weird chemistry between the two of them. Vince McMahon loves a lot of the goofy stuff. Clearly, he became a huge Matt Riddle fan because he started getting more television time than anybody else on the show. And so they ran with it. That started in the summer. They've been the most consistently popular act on Monday Night Raw. They're over. Riddle is in the chamber. Randy is not. What if Matt Riddle eked out a win in the Elimination Chamber? What if he won the WWE Championship? And Randy Orton grows jealous and finally drops him 1 week with an RKO to set up a title match at WrestleMania. He can't believe that this goof actually won the world title. He's tired of all the comedy. He's tired of all the bullshit. He wants his belt back. There's your setup for WrestleMania. Now, they would be playing second fiddle to Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, which is why the idea of a unification appeals to me. You know, your world title should never play second fiddle. Ever. They did this with the World Heavyweight title. It ended up being relegated to second-class status. I'll never forget. I don't remember what year it was. Whatever year, Del Dipshit was probably the World Heavyweight Champion. So we're probably going back about a decade. But it got to a point in this brand split back then where the World Heavyweight title, the big gold belt, was being defended on Raw, which had the other championship, but it was being defended on Raw in like the opening match or second match from the top or something on Raw. It felt like another, you know what it felt like? It felt like what the FTW belt is right now in AEW, which is not a good thing. So I don't believe any world title should ever play second fiddle. The only way to fix that problem is to have one top title. That is the only way to fix that problem. But AJ Styles against Edge is the match that I want for those two at WrestleMania, and that doesn't need to be for a championship. It doesn't. So what do you want? Do you want AJ Styles winning a secondary title and doing what he did a few years ago against Nakamura at WrestleMania when they had a match in the middle of the card? Or do you finally want one unified heavyweight champion? Because I got news for you. For all the people who will counter the idea of a unification by asking, what about creating new stars? What about creating new stars? How did that work out for Big E? Huh? How did that work out for him? What did putting the title on Big E for 3 months and then taking it away from him the way that they did really do for him? I'll tell you what it did for him. Nothing. It did nothing for Big E. And now he's relegated back to tag team duty on the other show. Big E's singles push is dead. How many more of those reigns are we going to get with people that they're supposedly trying to elevate? How many more Big E's are there going to be? If they have no plans, no real plans to elevate somebody, then unifying the titles and putting it on Brock Lesnar or putting it on Roman Reigns doesn't matter. You can have a revolving door of champions, but if the writing and the booking don't support them, if the writing and the booking never changes, then guess what? Nothing really changes. This is a systemic issue in this company where they are simply either unable or unwilling to create new stars. Real stars. I'm not talking about fake stars for 6 months before they slide back down the card. Real fucking stars. Stars who aren't just going to headline WrestleMania this year, but next year. And the year after that. Big E was never headlining WrestleMania. And he very likely never will. And I know that hurts people, some people's feelings, but that's just the reality of the situation. If they don't believe in him, then they need to find somebody who they do believe in. Because Brock Lesnar is not going to be around all the time. And Roman Reigns is only one health scare away from putting Vince McMahon in a position that he really doesn't want to be in. I hope they see things through with Austin Theory. He is a future WrestleMania headliner for this company. But it's going to take more than one guy. I look at NXT and I see Bron Breakker as a WrestleMania headliner in the future. Carmelo Hayes is another one. Until they start believing in some people, though, this is what we're left with. Which brings me to Ronda Rousey, who returned at the Royal Rumble after a 3-year absence. Her promo on Raw sucked. She wondered which champion she would challenge, or she should challenge, at WrestleMania. At one point, Kevin Dunn's paw slipped, and he hit the crowd noise button at the wrong moment because the crowd was silent, and suddenly we heard all these fake cheers before they quickly died down again. I know they've been pumping in crowd noise for months since they left the Thunderdome, but this is just pathetic now. She kept referring to Becky Lynch as Rebecca for some reason, as if that's supposed to be some kind of an insult, calling the woman by her full name. She didn't say much of anything until Becky came out. She was more amused than anything at Ronda using her government name. She reminded us that she is the only person with a win over Ronda Rousey, and that nobody has beaten her for the championship since. Ronda grabbed her by the arm, flipped her over onto the mat, and said, "We would get our answer on Friday," and stormed off. On SmackDown Friday night, they tried to swerve us into thinking that she had chosen Becky Lynch and that Charlotte would be picking Sasha Banks as her opponent for WrestleMania, before Ronda finally came out and made it very clear that she was going to be challenging Charlotte. So Ronda is going to be exclusive to SmackDown going forward, which is their gift to the executives at Fox. They can save Ronda against Becky for Hollywood next year, but hey, you know, a lot can happen in a year. It's a risk. Putting the match off for a year is a risk. Ronda and Charlotte had an excellent match at Survivor Series in 2018. Really physical match. She came across way better, Ronda did on Friday, than she did on Monday. The people were behind her on Friday. She actually looked like she wanted to be there. They hate Charlotte enough that I think Ronda might be okay with these as far as the crowd reactions go, but she has had a very adversarial relationship with the fans in the past. It actually goes back to that Survivor Series match. After it was over, Charlotte gave her a beatdown with a kendo stick and a chair. She was beating up the referees, and the live crowd was chanting, "Thank you, Charlotte," and "You deserve it," at Ronda as she was leaving. She was all, like, she had welts all over her body, and she was bleeding, and the crowd is chanting, "You deserve it." Supposedly, it wasn't a work. It really got to her, and after that, she didn't much care for the fans. The fans seemed to be cheering for her so far. I mean, it's hard to tell through all the fake noise that they keep pumping in. I mean, these people do more pumping in one night than I do all year putting gas in my car. But look, I'm a fan of Ronda Rousey being back in WWE. May not always sound like it, but I am. I am a fan of her being back. When she made those comments a few years ago on Steve-O's podcast that pissed everybody off, she was complaining about how the fans don't appreciate her and the sacrifices that she's made being on the road 200 days a year. Fuck these fans. Calling what they do fake fights for fun. I remember Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax and some of the other women on the roster took offense to her using the F word. Ooh, she used the F word. And then Ronda doubled down and said that she was offended by everybody being offended at her calling it fake, when she did real fighting for a living, and putting those two things on the same level and sort of, you know, equating them, offended her. She said, "Do you know what would happen if you got into 300 real fights in a year? You would be dead." And Nia Jax said that she would knock Ronda the fuck out if she ever came back to the company and if she was ever booked in a match against her. All these wrestlers freak out at the smallest mention of the word fake. Yet they have no problem living on Instagram, posting photos backstage, heels mingling with faces, faces mingling with heels. They're all great friends, exposing the business. But Ronda calls it fake fighting for fun, and they get all up in arms. Ronda would murder Nia Jax if they ever got in a real fight. She would snap her fucking arm off and beat her over the head with it. And that goes the same for everybody else on that roster, with the possible exception of Shayna Baszler. She would be doing Nia a favor if she ripped her arms off. That way she wouldn't be able to tweet dumb shit. But when she was around last time, I enjoyed her work. She had one of the best debuts in WWE history at WrestleMania 34. The way they put that match together and she held up her end of it, it was fantastic. It was the best match of the night. She had very good matches in her run last time. She was only there for a year, but she had very good matches with Charlotte, very good match with Sasha Banks at the Royal Rumble, and when she left, the women's division died. It died off a lot, because the company seemed to lose interest in it. But her comments about the fans, I could never really figure out if she was working everybody, or if she really did feel some resentment towards them. I think she did, at least a little bit. I think she felt some resentment towards the fans. Maybe she still does. You know, I wanted to see her lean more into it and embrace it. I think heel Ronda is something that would come more natural to her. But if she's in there against Charlotte, then she's not going to be the heel. After Ronda left, though, on Monday, to go back to the segment on Raw Monday, after Ronda walked out on Becky, Lita came out to confront Becky Lynch. She challenged Becky to a match at Elimination Chamber for the Raw Women's title. Apparently, I mean, they didn't mention that it was a title match, but according to WWE.com, it is. And so it is now official. They will clash in 2 weeks for the Raw Women's Championship. Hey, if it works for Goldberg, then there's no reason it shouldn't work for Lita. But boy, you know, it just makes me think about the Royal Rumble. We just had two Royal Rumble matches. And I know it's specifically for a shot at WrestleMania. It's WrestleMania. It's stupendous. Shut the fuck up. I get that. But we had two Royal Rumble matches where these people were fighting for the right to challenge for the championship of their choosing. And then here we are now. Yeah, Brock Lesnar wins the Royal Rumble. Brock Lesnar now is going to go to the Elimination Chamber and win back the title he lost and end up against Roman Reigns anyway. Lita goes into the Women's Royal Rumble match. She wants to, you know, wrestle for the championship. She wanted Charlotte. She wanted to wrestle Charlotte for the title. She didn't win the Royal Rumble. So she shows up the next night and goes, "Well, I guess as a consolation prize, I couldn't get the match with Charlotte, so I'll just challenge Becky instead and get a title match anyway." As if the Royal Rumble matches could not possibly feel less important. But hey, if Goldberg can do it, there's no reason Lita can't. Goldberg's in the Hall of Fame, so is Lita. What makes him so special as opposed to her in this situation, right? So Lita is going to get her championship match. It's an attraction that they can put on in Saudi Arabia. They want stars on those shows. They want attractions. But the path for WrestleMania has to be Becky Lynch against Bianca Belair. Now, Raw tomorrow night airs on Sci-Fi with Seth Rollins against Matt Riddle. There was a time when Rollins said he would never work with Riddle after the comments that Riddle's wife had made on social media years ago about Becky Lynch. She made some derogatory comments about the way she looked. But they have since patched things up. Lita will be back on the show. And the Quiz Bowl is the third and final stage of the academic challenge between RK-Bro and the Alpha Academy. If you want my thoughts on the rest of SmackDown, you can find the review online. SmackDown sucked. There's your review. Over on NXT 2.0, we had a battle of the factions. Imperium against Diamond Mine. Imperium won out. The action was good, with Walter pinning one half of the Creed brothers. The crowd chanted Walter, so that is the name I shall use for him here. Got to keep Imperium strong for when Walter is going to challenge Bron Breakker for the NXT Championship at Stand and Deliver in April. I think that's where this is headed. Although, I could be wrong in this regard, because Tommaso Ciampa is still hanging around Bron Breakker. And they're 1-1, right? Ciampa beat him at Halloween Havoc. Breakker beat him the last time they squared off. We could be headed for the rubber match at Stand and Deliver. But it just feels to me the biggest championship match that you could do would be Breakker against Walter. Now, the thing is, if they want Bron Breakker to have a nice long reign as the NXT champion and not take the belt right off of him, then probably the Walter match is not the way to go. Because I definitely would not be pinning Walter or Gunther or whatever the fuck you want to call him. So that's the only thing that makes me think, okay, maybe we're going to get a rubber match instead with Breakker and Ciampa. But they set up an NXT women's title match for the show this Tuesday with Mandy Rose. She's going to be defending against Kaylee Ray. They did a show-long storyline of Ray chasing Mandy throughout the Performance Center with her baseball bat. Mandy first went to leave the building after their earlier segment where Toxic Attraction came out to make the save. Mandy was calmly heading to their SUV outside while she was being interviewed by one of their nosy reporters. When the driver rolled down the window, she couldn't get into the car. And the driver rolled down the window and it was Kaylee Ray. And you could hear in the back, JC Jane and Gigi Dolan were screaming. They were trapped in the back of the car. And off they went. Yet another kidnapping from the NXT parking lot, one of the most dangerous places in America. Once Kaylee Ray came back, Mandy was on her own. Her girls were gone, and she was running for her life the rest of the show. There was a backstage segment where Idris Inoue and Malik Blade, they're the underdogs in the Dusty Classic this year, they were sitting in the dressing room trying to think of a team name, and Inoue floated the name BBC as one idea. First of all, that's Keith Lee's move. That's gimmick infringement is what that is. There's only room for one BBC. But they're batting around these ideas and Inoue tells Blade, well, maybe you should go ask Mandy Rose since you have a crush on her. And right on cue, here comes Mandy. She's like running backwards and she stumbles. Like she's running away from something and she falls into Malik Blade's lap as she is fleeing from Kaylee Ray. So Ray shows up, she gives chase, Mandy runs off. Inoue says, hey, let's go follow them. And Malik says, I can't right now. You gotta give me a minute, I can't. Because you see, an attractive woman fell in his lap. And now, he has an erection. This is some of that 2.0 comedy. This is some of that edgy comedy here on this show, I guess. Cora Jade has been hounding Raquel Gonzalez about being partners in the Women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, which kicks off this month, I think. I have no idea who these other teams could possibly... I can maybe think of two other teams. I don't know who these other teams are going to be. They don't have a real division on this show. But then again, they don't have a real tag team women's division on Raw or SmackDown either. Gonzalez has been reluctant to be partners with her, so they had a match. Raquel won. And then after that, I guess she earned the respect of Raquel Gonzalez because Gonzalez had a change of heart. She agreed to be partners with Cora Jade, which I think pretty much telegraphs who the winners are going to be, because who the hell else is there? Who the hell else is there? You've got Persia Parada and Indy Hartwell. They're getting a match on TV this week with the champs. So I can't see them winning. They're the only other kind of real team they have in that division. So I think they're pretty much telegraphing who's winning the Women's Dusty Classic with Raquel and Cora Jade. Saray returned to the ring for the first time with her new gimmick. They showed her walking to the gorilla position in her schoolgirl outfit with her magic medallion. And when she walked through the curtain, suddenly she transformed into her wrestling gear. Not that any of this is going to matter if she ever gets called up, because they'll cut all of this out like they did with Karrion Kross's entrance. So, first of all, I don't see her making it to the main roster. That's number one. Number two, if she does, this entrance will be completely cut. But most importantly, she kept her basement dropkick, which I think looks great. And then she finished off her opponent. I wrote the name down as Kayla Inlay, beat her with the Saito suplex. LA Knight lost to Joe Gacy after interference by Grayson Waller and his bodyguard Sanga. I thought that it was Sanka for a second. I was wondering why they named him after a brand of coffee. But would it really be any worse than some of the other names they've given out? After the match, Waller said Knight will have to wrestle Sanga on this week's show. Sanga is he's a big dude. He's a big dude. So is Von Wagner, who was standing silently in the back next to Robert Stone, who did most of the talking, the way it should always be. Stone said that he used to be focused on the entertainment side of the business, but not anymore. He said Wagner is a future WWE and Universal Champion. God help us all. He said this is Von Wagner's world, and then Wagner said, we're all just living in it. Wagner is atrocious with a microphone in his hand. So it's good that they have somebody doing the talking for him. The problem is that Robert Stone is barely a manager. He's a parody of one. So it's hard to take anything he says seriously. Speaking of, we had Wendy Chu. Wendy Chu is still a thing for now. Out there wrestling in her footy pajamas, sleeping through parts of her match. Also feuding with Tiffany Stratton, who before Wendy's match with Amari Miller, Stratton promised Miller in the back that if she won her match tonight against Wendy, she would take her out shopping on a shopping spree as her reward. And this distracted her when Stratton showed up during the match, handed Miller her credit card, or I guess her daddy's credit card. This distracted her. Chu won with an axe handle lariat. And then when Tiffany Stratton threw a fit and demanded her credit card back, Amari Miller was kind of feeling around. She goes, oh, I don't have it. But in the aisleway, Wendy Chu is standing there and she holds the card up in the air and Stratton pitched a fit. Does the woman not realize she could just cancel the card? It takes one phone call. That's all you got to do. Just call the credit card company. Say that this woman stole it. You could probably send her to jail. She really wanted to get revenge on Wendy Chu. She'd send her to fucking prison. Bron Breakker and Tommaso Ciampa teamed up against Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza of Legado del Fantasma. And they came up aces. Breakker pinned Mendoza, which did not please Santos Escobar. And it throws a little more fuel on the fire between those two, heading into their match at Vengeance Day. This was not the end of the show, though. They paid off the show-long story with Kaylee Ray chasing Mandy Rose back to the ring. She gave Mandy a gory bomb and held the women's title up over Mandy's body to close things out. That match is this Tuesday. The following Tuesday is the Vengeance Day episode, which is airing on Sci-Fi. Pete Dunne against Tony D'Angelo in a steel cage has been added. That is in addition to Cameron Grimes challenging Carmelo Hayes for the North American title. Toxic Attraction defends their women's tag team titles against Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada. So that I said it was this week. It's actually next week. And Bron Breakker defends the NXT Championship against Santos Escobar. That has since been made official online, as all things are these days. And so that is your card for Vengeance Day, which is coming up in a little over a week. The email address for the show is thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @solemonster. I'm going to be live with you on Wednesday night after Dynamite, again on Friday night for the SmackDown Rampage recap. We've got the House of Glory show coming up next Saturday. And of course, next Sunday is episode 743 of the Solemonster Sounds Off here, heading into our 15-year anniversary later this year, all made possible because of all of you. And there'll be some channel membership content going up for members as well on the YouTube channel. So I will see you guys there. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we'll do it all over again next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solemonster Sounds Off.
Oh, poor Triple H. Poor Triple H. What's Triple H gonna do?
After all the years and all the stories about the shit behind the scenes, and all the politics and the political bullshit,
feel badly for all the other people and the talent that got fucked,
who will never have the career that Triple H had. They've never had the Hall of Fame career and may never have the Hall of Fame career because in a lot of cases, WWE fucked them creative. Those are the people that you should feel sorry for. The ones who will never have a Triple H career because of how badly they were botched.
Oh, poor Triple H. Poor Triple H.
He'll be fine.
The Solemonster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solemonster on Twitter @Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Solemonster. Solemonster Sounds Off.